Welcome to episode 3 of the Patterson Podcast. This is your host, David Mitchell. We're here to share tips and tools from the Patterson process and to hear the stories of people like you using the process to do incredible things. Today, we're diving into some of those incredible stories. We're speaking with Jason Yakulis, Senior Vice President for Strategy at CURE International. CURE is a nonprofit that operates charitable hospitals and programs in 29 countries worldwide. The children they serve and care for have conditions like clubfoot, cleft lips, and hydrocephalus. Without treatment, these children have little hope for a future. This is where CURE comes in, to bring hope and life. Since their first hospital opened in Kenya in 1998, CURE have had over 3 million outpatient visits. They've provided over 220,000 life-changing surgeries, and they've trained over 8,000 medical professionals. Behind all of that, they've used the Patterson StratOp process as their strategic system. Jason is their internal StratOp facilitator and champion amongst a team of others at CURE who have been trained in the StratOp process. Jason, you've been with CURE for almost 7 years now, and the work that CURE does is so inspirational. Why don't you share with us a story that has impacted you that really highlights why you're with CURE and the impact of the what you guys do?
Sure. We're blessed with the opportunity at CURE to get to impact thousands upon thousands of lives every year. Kids, families, communities. I've had the chance to meet a few of them. Working at headquarters, don't get to interact maybe as much one-on-one as my colleagues in the field do. But there's probably a handful that come to mind over that seven-year period that have really stuck out. One of them I was just thinking about was a little girl named Joy from Zambia. Mm. And what was crazy about it was a few years ago on my first trip to our hospital in Zambia, I was doing a little bit of due diligence, if you will, on, hey, what's going on at the hospital? What do they have going on? And one of the videos that our video team did was about Joy and her dad. Mm. And I actually had the opportunity then, after kind of watching the story, to meet Joy, meet her dad, T Africa. And T is a police officer in Zambia. And like so many stories at CURE, the story starts out with a family that has no hope at all for their child. Mm. Starts out with Joy had hydrocephalus, acquired hydrocephalus after she was born. That's basically water on the brain, if you're not familiar with that condition. And T and his wife didn't really know what to do with this. Mm. They hadn't seen any other children like Joy. The folks that they were going to for medical help weren't of help initially. And they actually ended up at sort of a traditional healer. You see this Christian guy, this professional police officer, who was just at his wit's end trying to get help for his daughter, had to do things like rub the blood of a chicken on her head or rub some herbs on her head to try to get the swelling to go down. He had come to the end of his rope so much that that's what they were hoping for. And of course, nothing happened as a result of that. They finally got introduced to CURE, and through some of the trained surgeons that we have in Zambia that have actually learned from our other hospital in Uganda, we're able to actually help Joy. We're able to treat her and reduce the pressure on her brain. And I got to meet Joy kind of bebopping around the hospital, having fun like any little girl would. I have two little girls at home myself, so I think maybe this is why one of those stories that sticks with me. As T's recounting this story across the table from us in the hospital, you see the pain in his eyes. And of a guy who finally found out that there was something he could do for his daughter. Mm. And look back over all of those things that they tried before with the traditional medicine, with the despair that they were in. And they finally were able to find medical hope. And at the same time, they were able to kind of rekindle their faith as a result of it because of the spiritual team at our hospital being able to minister to the family and to Joy while they were in our care.
Wow.
So seeing those stories happen, not just once, like that's not a unique story for CURE. That's a story that happens every day around the world in the 29 countries we serve in.
Wow. Jason, that's such a powerful story. Just to think of the impact of that work in Joy's life. No doubt her life will never be the same again because of that treatment. And just to think of her dad as well, seeing her get healthy and get the help that she needed. It's so cool. There aren't many of us who,
who experience days like that at work. So thanks so much for for sharing that today. So how did your path, both your own personal and cures, intersect with the work that we do at Patterson? What was it in you or in your team that really led you to come to Patterson and to StratOp in the first case?
So March 2010, I came on board at Cure and started on the grants management side of what we were working on. I can remember at that time, one of the questions you get asked a lot as a nonprofit when you're putting together an application or a proposal is, what's your strategic plan? Where are you going? Where are you headed? And at that time, our founder was still our CEO. We could always turn and look at our founder as our strategic plan, so to speak. He was kind of the living plan for getting the organization to a global scale. By the time he left as the CEO in, I think it was May of 2012, we had grown to be serving in 25 different countries. We didn't have much of any kind of codified plan, though, because we had our founder. So as we stepped into the next generation of leadership in the organization, one of the things several of us brought to the attention of our second CEO was, we really need to come up with some sort of strategic guidance, strategic plan that sets the stage for where we're headed going forward. Because it wasn't the same kind of geographic growth that we were looking to experience in our founding generation. We were actually looking to, the phrase we used was, grow deeper. The vision that was cast at the time was, if you look at the network of Cure, kind of like an orchard of trees, we'd sprinkled a lot of seeds, but hadn't gone back and actually tended to the roots and made sure that those plants were maturing and delivering the most and best fruit that they could. So that was the change in vision. Didn't mean we were doing things really differently from a style of care, but just an overall focus. So in the first year following that CEO transition, we spent some time looking into different strategic planning mechanisms. I had spent some time doing that in my job prior to coming to Cure, and really wanted to make sure that we were going to do something that wasn't just about getting a document in place so we could check a box or put something on the shelf so it could gather dust. We wanted something that we could work with, we could live with. Just about probably about 9 months or so after our CEO transition, our folks met Kurt and Nancy Richardson. And that was how we first got introduced to the process, through the process that they use in their company. The Richardson's first gift to Cure was a week of time with Pete.
And as you began engaging with StratOp a few years ago, what were some of the early hits and maybe some of the early misses that you had with the process and beginning to install it in the team?
Yeah, well, I think probably the biggest miss or thing we underestimated was, we weren't coming from any kind of culture of planning. We were coming from a culture of being reactive. When you look at the types of countries that we're working in, we're constantly working in kind of a quadrant A, putting out fires all the time. There's not a whole lot of time to spend time to plan proactively, or there had not been historically. That was something we had to be very intentional about taking steps to make happen. So I'd say that was probably one of our biggest challenges, was just kind of that internal organizational culture alignment around, we're actually going to take the time to not just act, but think before we act. The other big challenge we had right out of the gates, we had a portion of the senior leadership of Cure that was fully on board, started rowing the boat in the direction we had kind of cast. But we did have a section of the organization that took much longer to come in line with that. In fact, probably took at least 18 to 24 months for that section of the org to come online. So without that happening, that slows the pace for the rollout of the entire process. So figuring out how to shorten that distance for organizations that are going through something similar, I'd say is pretty important. The faster you can get everybody on board, the faster you can start to see real progress being made.
That's good. And you raised an issue there about all the different cultures and countries you work with. What has that been like for you in your work facilitating to deal with these different cultures, these different countries, different nationalities? What's that been like?
That's a fantastic question. And a real quick, maybe baseline understanding too, is one of the things that Cure is doing with StratOp is using StratOp to build the network that is Cure International. So one of those things, going back to that founding generation example, was we were working in 25 countries And there were 25 separate things kind of going on. They weren't networked really well. Some were networked better than others, but there really wasn't the sense of this thing that is the Cure International Network. So one of the tools we're using with StratOp is providing a common language, a common process in all of the countries that we're working in and the programs that we're developing in order to kind of bring everybody together to really be that network that we've aspired to be. I think in looking back then over the last several years, as we've started to roll that process out, I think maybe we've done 22 different StratOp exercises that have covered maybe 17 or 18 different nationalities.
Wow.
In those. So yeah, we have both the countries specifically that we're serving in, and then several of our global programs that pull in folks from all over the place. And some of our locations are actually truly, truly international in their staff makeup. It makes for some interesting discussion at some point. Yeah, it really does.
What's been, out of all those countries and places, you know, you're a global traveler and you've been doing StratOp in all these different places, what's maybe probably been the most fun or most interesting country in which you facilitated the process and why?
Oh, that's not fair, because everybody's going to be listening to this and they're going to wonder why I didn't pick their country. So one of the first, what I'll call pure facilitations that I did, because I did our corporate renewal the first year and we'd been working through scrubs and whatnot. But one of the first kind of start from scratch, ground up pieces was a partnership that we were looking at in Israel. And it was an interesting experience because from the get-go, we had a British trust or foundation. We had folks, Israeli Arabs on the ground in Nazareth, and then we had the team from Cure all coming together kind of in this three-way partnership model to try to do StratOp. So really, I picked an easy first one to try to work through. And we started off that time together, and really some clashes in cross-cultural communication on day one, gaining some clarity on day two, and then turning it around by day three. But what was fun during that whole process was the team relationally really gelled, even though there were a whole bunch of challenges related to the actual topic at hand, the partnership that we were trying to develop, wrestle through and make sure it was a good one for everybody. But the relational stuff there was fantastic. We ended the week, ended my time in Israel, walking through Hezekiah's tunnel, outside of Jerusalem. I remember that because for those of you that have not been in Hezekiah's tunnel, which I would imagine is many of the people listening to this podcast, you're walking in a straight line for 45 minutes. You could turn off your headlamp in the dark, and it's about, I don't know, probably about 3/4 of as wide as my shoulders. So I'm kind of bent over, hunched over. Every so often, I'm smacking my head off of bedrock as the ceiling in the tunnel increases and decreases at different times. And coming out of the tunnel, I was reflecting on, wow, I started off my time with a StratOp that felt exactly how I ended my time in Israel, working my way along. But we got to the end and we saw some fruit from it. And it was a wonderful experience that I wouldn't trade for the world.
That's a great analogy. I love that. Now, you guys are known for resourcefulness and innovation, again, in terms of all of the different work that you do. What are maybe some of the creative things you found yourself doing with the process, with the team, or even in your own work as a facilitator?
One of the things, and I'm really glad you guys gave us this gift, in the initial StratOp training that I did, was there's a waterproof OtterBox case that all of the facilitator markers came in, and it's got this great latching sound to it. And one of the things I've found helpful is starting everybody off on as much of the same level as we can. That whole idea that we're checking titles at the door. So one of the things that we've done with that is because I carry that OtterBox case with me everywhere, I take that around the room with introductions, ask people to put their business card in the case as a method of introducing across the table, and then step back to the front of the room. And to reinforce my point about checking titles at the door, we latch it, make that nice snap. We then put it outside the room for the rest of the time that we're together. It's just kind of a visual reminder for everybody of that's where titles are staying. Mm. We're all in this together. What's funny is when folks get more concerned than I do about the case, and partway through the morning we'll go out and rescue it because they're afraid someone's going to take the case because it's so nice. But that's usually good for a laugh or two by the end of the first day.
So in your work as well with Cure, do you connect with a lot of other nonprofits, and do you is there a community of sharing learnings? And if so, what do you share with other nonprofits about how they might think about their work or their strategy? And what are maybe some of the things that you guys have learned from others?
We do spend some time interacting with other nonprofits. It's actually something we identified as one of our core values early on of intentional relationships that we needed to get better at. Because when you're in that founding mode, that first generation mode, you're almost laser focused on where you want to get to. And you're not really looking around beside you to see who you can bring along with you. So that's a lesson we're constantly learning. We have not come anywhere close to learning that yet, but we do spend more time reaching out to others and interacting with folks that come to us with questions than maybe we would have in the past. I think the biggest theme I can take away from some of those interactions recently is the topic of intentionality. I think probably the question we get asked the most, we do a lot, we measure a lot. We can get better at measuring and sharing those measurements. But one of the things we measure and try to measure well is how we do spiritual ministry. We have other ministries coming to us asking, how do you measure that? Like, how can you quantify what you're doing from that standpoint? So we share a little bit about it, but I find the folks that have approached us with that question, I find them asking the wrong question. Mm. And the question that they're seeking to ask is, we want to measure how we do what we do. When they start to explain what they're doing, there are many good organizations out there that have been motivated by people of faith that may have had some opportunity to minister to the spiritual needs of people, but that has not been an intentional part of what they do. They may have come up with a particular widget that they are providing to people in need, and then they've been motivated by their faith, but they haven't married that to an intentional ministry program or figured out how can I do that alongside of this other thing. And that's the question they need to be asking, is a question of intentionality. And that plays into strata, critically speaking, going back to what I said earlier about kind of getting things started on the right foot, coming out of an initiation. If you're not intentional about picking up the process, running with it, driving it forward, it doesn't matter what you say, that level of intentionality has to come along with it, or it'll never happen.
One of the things that I've seen Cure do, which I think is really fun, you have a great way of bringing influencers, sports stars, etc., alongside Clayton Kershaw. I know I've seen tons of pictures of him. What is it about Cure that compels guys like Clayton and other stars and influencers to come alongside?
Well, you'd probably have to ask Clayton directly what exactly clicked with he and his wife about Cure. They started off learning about us a bit in Zambia and have broadened our relationship there. I think for people that experience Cure, and it's about, you can experience Cure in different ways. Some people experience it through the stories that they hear. Some people physically have to see it and are moved. I look back to one of our patient stories that our storyteller, Brent Hansen, has shared before with folks, about a mother in Ethiopia saying that our hospital in Ethiopia is a place where God walks on earth. And when you can see that happening, really happening tangibly in front of you or through the stories that are shared, and that's not just a tagline or a marketing pitch, but actually healing the sick and proclaiming the kingdom of God is happening wherever you're going, I think it's that special sauce. That intentional integral mission is the special sauce that really captures people's attention.
Yeah, you feel and embody the values that you guys speak about.
Yeah,
and so you exactly. Can really see, you know, when you're sat across the table, as you said, from Joy's father, you really see and feel the impact of the work you do. It's not theoretical. Mm-hmm. It's lives changed.
Yeah.
Tell us then about the future for Cure. Obviously, things change. We can't predict the future, but we can create it to some extent. What do you guys see about where you're headed in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so in the next few years, we're continuing forward with this theme of growing deeper. We're in the process of going through another executive leadership transition right now, but that hasn't resulted in any kind of change of vision. That mentality, that focus on building up the quality of the care we're providing, both physically and spiritually, training others to do the same thing, that's something that we're focused on just getting better at, maturing the organization. So that's something we're going to see more and more of in the years to come.
You were trained a number of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago or so in StratOp. How have you grown personally, both in StratOp and just the other intangible impact of facilitating? And where do you see yourself going with this?
Yeah, I mean, for the near term, we're still in the midst of working through it with Cure. So for now, it's a little hard for me to project any kind of vision beyond that. We still have work to do in terms of bringing our colleagues around the world and at headquarters together around kind of this common language. And that's something we try to reinforce with folks is StratOp is a tool for us to get a better result. It's not the end result in and of itself. And a lot of times I think in the past, we've kind of tripped up over that as an organization over what's that final point we're aspiring to. We want to make StratOp like breathing, is in that we want it to be something that is just sort of an instinctual reaction. Let's gain perspective first before we put together a plan and then before we take action. And if we can start to do that enough in advance, we can kind of battle against that reactive nature.
And in your own journey of mastery, what's kind of the big thing you've learned over the last 4 years or so as you're journeying in your own mastery of StratOp?
Yeah, I've learned my place in the system. My first year, 18 months, I spent focusing in on getting the system in place at a headquarters level and doing the work, working through scrubs, working through a little bit more hands-on with the team. As time has progressed, I found myself transitioning more towards kind of a larger pure facilitator role. And right now, the biggest struggle is trying to figure out, so how do I bring along those other champions internally that are going to, again, like I said before, make StratOp like breathing for Cure. That's the most critical need I see for us right now as an organization, is solving that if we're going to keep moving forward with the process for a long time to come. And I truly hope we do.
We do too.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the quick fire round now, uh-oh, Jason, to learn a little more about you. What's a favorite book of yours and why?
So I've been reading Culture Map by Erin Meyer and got to first see her speak at the Global Leadership Summit this last year that Willow Creek puts on. The idea of cross-cultural communication and figuring out who's more of a low-context communicator versus a high-context communicator.
What does that mean?
In the room.
What's a low-context versus high-context?
So low-context is a typical American. Straight, direct, to the point, very clear. We overstate what we want people to understand. High context communicators are more about listening to the air, reading between the lines, understanding what's going on with what's not being said, and bringing kind of your own cultural perspective to that understanding. So in her book, Erin takes on, she's done some study as an American living in France, takes a look at several different layers on, we could maybe call it a communication wavelength in comparison to our StratOp thinking wavelength. And looking at how different cultures are in relation to their counterparts, maybe in a particular room or business or whatnot. So if I'm in a room where I'm facilitating, say, a German, an American,
British,
we throw them in the mix. Let's see, who else can I throw in the mix? Somebody from India, somebody from the United Arab Emirates, someone from Saudi Arabia. I say this because it's actually been one of the rooms that I've done before. Understanding how each of those individuals are understanding what I'm saying, and then having an understanding of what their colleagues around the table are saying and interacting. That's pretty important as a facilitator. Yeah. So I'm really excited. I'm only partway through the book, but having heard her entire talk, really excited about that.
Good.
We're hoping to do some more work maybe with her in the future at Cure. It's really exciting
communication
stuff.
Communication. I love that.
The culture map.
The culture map. Thank you. What's a daily practice that you do that you would encourage others to follow?
Drinking water.
Okay. Got it.
Feels like something that my family would have told me. Don't forget to smile. I probably forget to smile too much. So yeah, don't forget to smile. Yeah.
Well, we've been doing it a lot this last 30 minutes, which is great. Who's been a great mentor to you and why?
But the most positive mentor for me in life has probably been my grandmother. I was raised by my mom and my grandma, and she's the one who, while my mom was at work, would I spent the most time with. So she was like mom number two. I can remember just learning from her, seeing her interactions with church, with people in the community, This was a lady who, it didn't matter your walk of life, whether you were the richest person in town or you were the pagan biker gang across the alley that she took cake to after a wedding. She interacted with everybody equally. Mm. And that's really had an impact on just who I am and what I do.
I can see that. Yeah, that's infused in you too. And lastly, what's a place in the world that you love to be where you feel most alive?
Well, it used to be on the back of a motorcycle until I had children. actually, probably now it would be really in the times when I can truly disconnect and spend time with my kids. That's when I have the most fun. It's so hard to make that switch and actually spend that directed time, but that's when you have the most. When we can start off a day playing Operation with your five-year-old.
Like, I've seen pictures of you guys.
Yeah, that's that. Pretty cool. That's a pretty cool way to start.
Your daughter's getting into the family business.
That's yeah. We're going to raise them up well. I think I have few connections they can make later in life. But.
That's great. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today and leading us through this conversation that really around kind of what happens when strategy comes to life and even what happens when strategy, in a sense, can bring life throughout these hospitals and the amazing work that you guys do. It's so fun to chat with you. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's always fun to share a little bit about CURE. So thanks.
You've been listening to the Patterson Podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Mary Wade. Special thanks to Ox Creative for the music. And if you're listening and wanting to know more, you can reach out to us at PattersonCenter.com. That's Patterson with one T. It would be our pleasure to hear from you and to guide you deeper into this conversation. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and when you're there, please leave us a review. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
That work?
Yes, thanks.
Cool.
That was awesome. Beautiful stories. Mm-hmm.